Where we're going to talk about best practices, focus primarily on user experience for creating great experiences for your users. And then I'm actually going to walk through the process of creating a prototype, the prototype that you'll see here in a moment, except a little less high fidelity, using Expression Blend. So how many of you have used Expression Blend? Oh, good. Wow. So how many of you are super proficient in Expression Blend? Okay, perfect. Good. So I think this will definitely be interesting for everybody. I'll wait a couple more minutes. So how many of you like that robot? That thing was so cute, right? I want one for my kid. Absolutely adorable. All right. So a little bit about what I'm going to talk about in the Refine session. I'm going to start out by showing an example of an application that's not necessarily well designed. It has a lot of great potential. It's actually nice functionality. It's usable, useful for people. There's just some things that this person who gave me permission to show their application is actually reconsidering. So I'm showing you like the really initial state of this application just to give kind of a baseline for maybe what is not well designed. Then I'm going to walk through and just talk about what makes for a well-designed application very quickly. And then I'm going to jump into 9 best practices, again, focused primarily on user experience. I will touch a little bit of code in both Visual Studio and I'll spend most of my time in Blend, but I will go into a little bit of code in Visual Studio when I need to address user experience issues because your code does definitely affect the user experience. So, again, I'm not going to go deep, but I will have to touch on a little bit of that. I chose 9 best practices just because we only have an hour. I could go on for a long time. I also like numbers divisible by 3. So with that, let's just take a look at this application that I was talking about. Before I show it to you, it's called Meal Nirvana. Again, it's got great functionality. What it does is it allows users to find restaurants near their current location. So it's hooking into the GPS functionality of the phone and finding restaurants for that user, that person, that meet certain criteria that that person is particularly fond of. It also allows the user to, what else does it do? It allows users to calculate tips for the people that are helping them, you know, to make everybody happy in the activity of dining. And it also allows the user to track their expenditures at restaurants, something that would be really useful for me because I tend to spend a lot of time at restaurants and it'd be nice just to know how much I'm spending there. Maybe I need to tone it down a little bit. So that's the application. It's Meal Nirvana. We're going to take a look at the design and expression design. We tend to as designers. How many of you have used expression design? A couple. Yay. it's actually a really great application. It's similar to Illustrator. It's a vector drawing program. So I'm going to use that just to kind of really quickly give you guys a couple of examples of what is not necessarily well designed in Meal Nirvana. So now we're looking at expression design. And let's first start by taking a look at Meal Nirvana's start page tile. It's not live. If you actually downloaded this application, it's not offering maybe, you know, like a restaurant, hey, you might want to check out this restaurant. We notice that your preferences tend to be such and such, and, you know, you're in this location. You tend to eat at this time. You might want to check out this type of restaurant. It's not offering any, you know, useful information like that. It's also not necessarily in the same style as you see with the other application tiles. Not necessarily a bad thing, but it might be interesting to explore something that's more in line with the Metro design language. So that's the first thing I want to call attention to. The next thing, the splash screen, super cute. That's what we're looking at here. Not necessarily, you know, the Metro design language style. Again, not necessarily a bad thing, but it's something that could potentially be explored further, just so the whole application experience feels more in line with our native applications and other third-party applications that are embracing the Metro design language. A couple of more things. So when you first actually launch past the splash screen and into the application experience, this is what you see. You can download this on the app on in the marketplace right now if you want to check it out. It's free, and it is actually a really nice application. So just some things. So what we're looking at here, they have the main experience housed in the panorama control. So it's a panorama experience, again, intended to be inviting, you know, expansive and explorative, which is great. They're using the default font that you get with the panorama control when you're using our project templates or our controls for the title where it says Meal Nirvana. You'll notice they're using Comic Sans. The font doesn't necessarily go well with our Sago WP font. That's another thing I would actually strongly recommend that this particular developer reconsider. Comic Sans is just, it's not as clean a font as we would recommend that they choose. And it definitely doesn't go well with the default font at the top of the panorama control. A couple of other things with what we're seeing here, you know, a background image that's maybe a little bit more inviting, you know, like something maybe that has more to do with family and friends, going out to eat together, maybe some image that, you know, says great, great food, dining experience images might be nice. Not quite sure what this background image is trying to convey, just to make it feel a little bit more in tune with the intent of the application. Okay, one more thing. I keep saying that. You'll notice, if you look closely, I notice it right away, where it says results provided by Yelp, and you see this photo, they're not aligned at left, and it really doesn't, why, you know? So these kind of things, are things that really should be considered. You know, again, great functionality, just some things that this developer, and they are reconsidering this, in their application experience to make it a little bit better for users. A couple more things I want to dive into as you drill deeper into the application experience. Let's take a look at the tip calculator. Again, using Comic Sans and some graphics, the font choices and the graphic choices and the image choices in the background don't necessarily go well together. It doesn't, even just within the application itself, not even considering the Metro design language or our native application styles, they don't really go well together. So all of this should, you know, be looked at a little bit more closely to make sure everything kind of holds and gels together in a holistic manner, visually and interaction-wise. So on the interaction front, these two buttons down here, Add Expense and Clear, these are buttons. We have a button style. I don't really see a reason why they want to diverge from that button style. I would highly recommend that they utilize the button style. People learn what a button looks like, and they automatically know how to interact with that button. And unless there's a really good reason to diverge, and there are oftentimes, it's probably a better idea to follow the model and use the application patterns that we provide out of the box and not mess with them. So just a couple of examples. One more thing. So we're deeper in the application experience. Panorama is intended to invite the user in, like think magazine cover, draw you into the experience. And then once you get deeper into the application, we typically don't recommend using a panorama. We would recommend at this level using the pivot control. It's just a little bit more focused, a little bit more streamlined. And again, panoramas are intended for that, you know, that invitation into your application experience. So I mentioned quite a few things. Again, this is not necessarily well designed. Great functionality, really fun application. Many things that the developer could reconsider and make it amazing for both the users and help the developer make more money so everybody's happy in the end. So, and again, I'm not picking on this application. I got permission to show it. Many phone applications are not necessarily well designed. There are many things, you know, that could potentially be improved. So with that, what defines a well-designed phone application? They're useful, usable, and desirable. So with respect to useful, does it solve a real user problem? In the case of Meal Nirvana, it does solve a real user problem. Imagine being out with friends and you all decide that you want to go eat. Maybe you don't know the area, can't decide on a restaurant. It would be great to pull out this application and have it help you find a restaurant that makes everybody happy in the group. It really is solving a problem in many respects. That's just one example. I use this example all the time. An application that maybe makes farting noises, not necessarily solving a real user problem. Fun, but maybe not useful. I like images to kind of convey points. This is the opposite of useful. Not an application, obviously, but it is quite the opposite of useful. The car has no wheels. It's not solving a problem. It's not going to drive me anywhere. In fact, it's causing more of a problem than it's solving by messing up my parking space or my driveway. Not a great experience. So, usable. Usable applications are, they're performant, they load quickly, they don't crash very often, the flow is natural, it's easy to learn how to interact with these types of applications that are usable. You don't need a manual to figure out how to interact with them. Really important, especially in a phone interface, could you imagine? You need a manual to figure out how to use it. Probably not a great user experience. And the content and information contained in these applications is very meaningful and appropriate for the users. Again, I like images. This is, again, the opposite of usable. But imagine using this teapot, trying to pour yourself or your friend some tea. Probably get burned. It's not a great experience, right? So desirable. Desirable applications kind of they take things to the next level. They really resonate with users. They invite them in. Maybe it's with respect to the iconography, the graphics, the color schemes, things that the user can really relate to, animations and transitions. On phone, desirable applications will also take advantage of the hardware, whether it's the accelerometer, the GPS, to its fullest advantage. And with respect to Windows Phone, it's also going to embrace the Metro design language, feel part of the overall application ecosystem, feel a part of it, and feel natural and easy to use for users. So again, one image opposite of desirable, at least in my case. I don't like messes, so a home like this definitely wouldn't be desirable for somebody like me. I also like a nicer color scheme, although, you know, it's kind of interesting. So just a couple of images to help communicate these points a little bit more strongly. Again, quite the opposite of what you want as a user in your, or as a developer and a user in your applications. Now, let's talk about our 9 best practices for well-designed Windows Phone applications. I'm going to use an application that is not necessarily in a well-designed state to help illustrate these points, and we'll walk through each of them and fix the issues, and in the end, we'll end up with a much better user experience. First, let me just give you a sneak peek of the current experience so you can see where we're at and what we're going to fix. So here it is running in the emulator. I would love to show you on the phone, but I'm a little clumsy with the phone, and I like to walk around, so I don't want to be tied to the computer all the time. And the emulator works great. So what this is a weather application. I tend to like weather applications because I always want to know, is it going to be warm? I'm always cold. So what it does is it shows a 5-day forecast for wherever, the idea is for wherever you are. I actually don't have it hooked up to GPS, so you're going to have to imagine. I have it hard-coded to Seattle. That's why the weather's looking like it does there. And it is in Fahrenheit. So it shows the 5-day forecast. It also shows weather alerts for the particular area using the National Oceanographic something or another data service. So that I know maybe there's a blizzard that I need to watch out for if I wanted to go through the mountain passes in the Seattle area. And it also useful not only in Seattle because I like to look at images even where I live, but imagine if this actually was hooked up to GPS data, I would be able to, I've never been to Brussels before or I've never been to Antwerp before, I would be able to see images of Antwerp maybe to help orient me and get me excited about things to see. You know, so I think kind of interesting functionality, but that's kind of the core experience. And just a couple of other things I want to show you really quickly. You can look at a larger image. You can actually comment on these images. You could send a comment. I'm pulling data from Flickr. So you could send a comment. The idea is you could send a comment. I don't have this hooked up. To, you know, the owner of that image. If I go back, that's one of the things we're going to fix. If we look at the alert data, you'll see that you can get the full alert data details. You only get a snippet of the information on the panorama page, the opening page, so you'd get more information. So that's the basic functionality. And with that, let's go ahead and take a look at the first best practice, which is embrace typography and use font weight and size to convey hierarchy in your application experiences. Core to the Metro design language and our native applications and third-party applications, in fact, is a celebration of typography. Working hand-in-hand with that are the principles that Arturo mentioned of content, not Chrome, and authentically digital. Most information conveyed on these application interfaces is textual data. Why adorn and obscure that information unnecessarily with gradients and graphics and Chrome? Why not attempt to or work towards celebrating typography and use that to convey the information in beautiful and meaningful ways? Now, that isn't to say that you can't use graphics. I think we had a little conversation about that after Arturo's last presentation. It's just really, celebration of typography. It can be beautiful, and it can actually make the information really meaningful. So graphics, definitely an important part and can be used, just should be really thought about how they're going to be used. So with that, let's go ahead and go into Expression Blend, and I'm going to show you how we're going to take our current application and have it celebrate typography a bit more. And I'm going to work, I think I said this, interchangeably between Expression Blend and Visual Studio. Depending on what I'm doing, primarily design tasks, I'll work in Blend because I'm most comfortable. Visual Studio for anything that requires code. I'll go deeper into Expression Blend, and many of you obviously are familiar with Expression Blend just by the show of hands, so I'm going to move quickly and kind of focus on these best practices. But here's the Object and Timeline tool window, and this is the tree structure for the application itself. So I have three panorama items, and in each of them are a grid and a list box control with data that I'm controlling the presentation of using data templates. So I actually have a data template to help me move quickly that I'm going to apply to these various aspects of the interface to make it celebrate typography a bit more than it currently is. So what I do is I right-click on the list box, and I select Edit Additional Templates, and I'm going to edit the Generated Items template for the list box data, and I'm going to apply a resource. Again, I've already created an alternate data template, and we can take a look at it very quickly so you can see what's in it, just to help me move more quickly. So I have this local weather item template that I'm going to apply, and if I undo it with a Control Z, you'll see that things instantly change quite a bit. Clearly, this is utilizing typography a bit more than the previous data template was. So we're moving in the direction that I want to move in. And now let's just quickly take a look at the data template. So if I again go into Edit Additional Templates, edit the Generated Item template. If I edit that current template, I'm hitting Control 0 to show all of the information on screen. You'll see what I have in here are a series of stack panels with text blocks. And a border element to draw that line that you're seeing there. It's really as simple as that, and I'm just simply positioning things with margins and padding and spacing. So let's go back up to step back out of the data template. Blend has this nice functionality. I can click on these little things if you can see where my cursor is at the top, to quickly jump out and back up to the main page. So I'm going to do the same thing to my alerts list. I want to make that be a little bit more usable and, again, just embrace typography a bit more than it currently is, the benefits of typography. So if I right-click on it, again, I have a data template that I'm going to use. I'm going to apply that new data template. It is the alert item template. And you see, again, I'm going to undo it with a Control-Z and reapply it with a Control-Y. Things are drastically changing. One of the nice things now is I'm seeing more information about the alerts, so I can be on that main page and quickly scan the information and kind of see, again, maybe there's a blizzard somewhere I need to be aware of. Because there actually are in the United States, I guess, right now. So one other thing that I want to do, I have all this space freed up and I want to show more information because it'd be nice to see all of the alerts that I might want to be aware of as a user of this application. I'm going to use a wrap panel for the item template. Actually, I always get the names messed up, but we'll take a look at it here in a second. To show two columns, so I can show two columns of information very easily without having to hard code the placement of all of the information. To do that, again, I'm going to use a template that I've already created. I'm going to go into the items panel and I'm going to apply this resource, my item panel template. And if we take a look at that, I just want to show you what we have so you can get a better idea of what I'm doing behind the scenes. The items panel is just simply a wrap panel. If we look at the XAML, I can do a split view here. The item panel template, simply just a wrap panel. So that's what I'm doing to make the two columns of information. So I have taken the information that looked nice previously, embraced topography a bit more. If we look at, we're seeing more alert information, so it's definitely a bit more usable. I think it looks better as well. If we look at our weather information, the really nice thing about this is, you know, boom, I don't have to interpret maybe small graphics. I instantly know it's snowing or it's overcast. And when I run it and it actually hooks up to the data, I have some code running that will color the information based on the temperature. So not only can you instantly just know what the weather is like, you know, for the week, you'll also get an instant idea of what the temperature is like. Maybe you need a coat. So I'm going to go ahead and run it. I'm hitting F5 so that we can see that in action. So you can see today in Seattle, it's clear and it's an okay temperature. Tomorrow it's going to be cloudy and cool. The next day overcast, a little bit warmer. So I can just kind of instantly get an idea without really having to sit there and, you know, like interpret the information with a lot of effort, understand what the weather is going to be like and what the temperature is going to be like. So we're moving in the right direction. The next thing, and Arturo mentioned this, we on the Windows Phone Design team, there was a grid. There's a very particular grid that was used to help define the user interfaces for the native applications. We definitely encourage you to use a grid system to guide layout of your interface elements. Clean, light, open, and fast. That's one of the principles that Arturo mentioned, can really be impacted by use of grids. Grids can help you organize and align information, make it feel like it's working really well together. Things are, you know, placed in a logical manner. It also makes it easier to utilize negative space or empty space in the interface, which is great because then the user's eye is drawn to what's most important on that page. Grids can really truly help make this happen. And I'm going to go into Expression Blend. I have a PNG that I'm going to use to help align my information a bit better than it currently is so that it's just feeling a lot better. That's another thing. When things are not quite aligned, you get a – I actually feel a little bit tense because I instantly recognize it. If you don't recognize it, it still would likely cause a little bit of tension within you. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But let's take a look at using the grid now in Expression Blend and Visual Studio very quickly. So what I've done is added a grid image, and I've collapsed it with that particular grid that we use for Windows Phone. I'm going to duplicate it, make it a little bit more visible. Can everybody see it? If you can't see it, okay, I think we're good. So let me zoom in just a tiny little bit, make the image a little bit bigger. Oops. There we go. All right. So right away, I'm using the grid. I'm looking at the weather information. I could see that things are really not nicely aligned over on the left edge. there's also the alignment between elements doesn't really feel very logical. So we're going to address that. And if we look at our alerts information, again, you'll see that the left edge is really of the information just really not aligning very nicely. So we're going to address these issues in the weather data and the alerts data. Again, I'm going to use a data template. And we'll actually see more about this when I'm doing the build session, how I would actually do it, you know, with more precision. But for the sake of time, let's go ahead and use the data templates that I have prepared already. Again, I right-click on my weather list. I select the edit additional templates, select the item template, and I'm going to apply the resource that's local weather B underscore item template. And if I control Z it or undo it, you'll see and reapply it, you'll see it feels a lot better with the new alignment that I applied to the data templates using the grid. It just feels better. Let's do the same thing with our alerts information. So this time I'm going to apply alerts B underscore item template. And again, I'm going to undo it just so you can see the difference. We actually saw a color change. I didn't intend that, but just the alignment in general feels much better with the new data template that I created using the grid. So if I turn this grid off, I'm going to delete it, that extra one that I created, and just collapse the visibility over in the property panel of that grid. And let's take a look at these two user interfaces or two panels in my panorama, and you just see it looks a heck of a lot better. Let me save it, and I'm going to go flip over to Visual Studio real quick, and I'll show you, as a developer, how you can use that grid at design time or at debug time to help you with the alignment of your elements as well. And Jeff Wilcox actually created the code for this, and I'm just simply going to turn it on. Let me save this real quick. Save all. Let's go over to Visual Studio, which is synced with all of this, these project changes I've been making. So if you look up, if you check out Jeff Wilcox's blog, he has created this Metro Grid Helper CS code that you can use in your applications. And you simply call it in app.xaml.cs. I have it commented out. Metro Grid Helper is visible equals true. And if I run my application, you'll see that I have the grid in debug mode, just kind of maybe as a final check. I think working at design time. Whoops. I'm not using the emulator here. Let's use the emulator. There we go. Okay. So, when you're actually, you know, intricately designing a user interface, I recommend using the PNG approach that I just showed in Expression Blend to align your elements. As a final check, I would recommend using, you know, the example that we're looking at here that Jeff Wilcox prepared that we'll look at here in a moment. So at debug time, we can see the grid appears. It's very faint, but it is actually the exact same grid that we saw previously, and it's just kind of a final check. It could even be what you use to address your alignment issues. All right, so let me figure out how to stop this. Okay, and I'm just going to quickly comment this grid helper out, save my project, and let's go back to the slides to help drive this point home a little bit more. Not only do grids make your UIs more aesthetically pleasing, make it more, you know, in line with the Metro design language, it can actually improve the usability of your applications. There's plenty of data out there that you could probably find on the internet to help support this. This is just one example. A man named Noam Trutinsky at Ben Gurion University ran some tests. This is a very simple interface that we're looking at. One on the same interface, just two different versions of it. One on the left, one on the right. I think that's right. It's a bank teller interface. There were a set of tasks that he ran users through using both of these interfaces. And the interface on the left tested a heck of a lot better than the interface on the right. And the amazing thing is just a couple of buttons were simply askew in the interface on the right. Not only does the aesthetic quality of your interface affect, affect people's perceptions of that interface? It actually affects the usability of your interfaces as well. So it really is important and beneficial to pay attention to. All right, so next, and Arturo definitely alluded to this, use animations, transitions, and effects to guide and delight your users. It can really, make your user experiences a lot more delightful, that third, general user experience principle that we talked about at the very beginning. And this is an example of the turnstile transition, page transition, when you're going from one page to the details for a particular item that you've selected. We're going to actually implement this in our application using the toolkit. The next thing that we're going to do is, you'll see this animation here, is we're going to utilize the tilt animation for items that do navigate users to subsequent pages. It helps just make it a little bit more usable. They know that when something tilts, when they touch it, it's going to navigate them somewhere. They can quickly learn that. It just makes it a little bit more usable and more fun. So to apply these tools, so the Windows Phone Toolkit is available on CodePlex. Has everybody used it here? Show of hands, a few people. So you can download it on CodePlex. There are tons of animations, tons of really great controls that you can leverage in your interfaces. Once you've downloaded and installed it, what we're going to do, again, I'm working in Visual Studio this time, is we're going to apply those page transitions. So I'm going to show you how to do that, and then I'm going to quickly show you how to apply the tilt effect, then I'm going to run the application. So again, after downloading and installing the toolkit, I would normally need to add a reference to the toolkit, but I've already done that. Let me just show you. I've already done that, so I don't need to do that. The next thing I would need to do to utilize those page transitions is I need to change the root frame to the toolkit's transition frame. And I would do that in app.xaml. I've just double clicked on it. I'm going to go down to where the root frame is defined. And I have it commented out. I'm just going to fix that and then comment out the phone application frame. So I'm replacing phone application frame with the toolkit's transition frame. So that's primarily the first thing that I would do. Go ahead and save that. I'll close that file. The next thing that I would need to do, let's apply the page transition XAML to mainpage.xaml. If I didn't already have a reference to the toolkit namespace, I would need to add this information that I have highlighted, this line that I have highlighted here. I'm using the wrap panel, which is also part of the toolkit, so I don't need to do that because it was automatically added when I leveraged it in Expression Blend. In my interface. After that, I'm going to use a snippet to make this faster. I would need to add the transition, the XAML that enables those transitions, and that's what you see here. Let me just highlight it. I've just double-clicked it and just popped it in, again, to help me move quickly. So I would need to add all this information. Details for this are all in the toolkit once you download and begin using it. All right, so we have it's set up on mainpage.xaml. Now I want to apply the page transitions to the three other pages that I have in my interface. So I'm going to go into my comment details page. I don't have a reference to the namespace here. Again, I'm using snippets to move faster, so I'm going to add a reference. So I have a reference to the toolkit. Then I'm going to add the XAML for my page transitions. And I'm going to do the same thing on the other two pages really quickly. Namespace, go back over to the main body of my page at the transition XAML, and I have one last page. So I've done image details. I need to do alert details. Namespace reference, and in the body, I'm adding the page transition XAML. I'm going to make a few changes here real quick. Actually, I'll do it in a moment. Let's go ahead and add the tilt effect, and then I'll run it, and then we'll take a look at where we're at. So to add the tilt effect, I want the tilt effect to appear on the alerts page, which once clicked clicks the alerts information. When an alert item is clicked, it will navigate you to the full alert details. The same applies for the images. When you click on one of the images, you'll be able to see the full image and add comments, you know, to the owner of that image as well. So I do this in the list box itself for these two items, for the images and for the alerts. And I can, because there's not a lot of XAML to this, I'm just going to go ahead and type it myself. So I'm going to my list box, which is here. Let's add one more return, and I'm typing toolkit, tilt effect, is tilt enabled, true. And I will copy this and apply it to, I've applied it to my alerts grid or my alerts list box. Now I'm going to apply it to the images list box. So my images list box is here, carriage return, and I just simply copied and pasted it in place. Let's go ahead and build it and just see where we're at. Okay, so if I go over here, you'll now see that when I click on one of these items, you see the tilt effect. If I'm just going to mouse away, let's click somewhere else on one of these items. When I click on the item, you see the tilt effect, and that's just a little glitch in my emulator. And then you see the nice page transition. If I click back, you see a nice page transition back, and the same applies for the images. Nice tilt effect, nice page transition. Let's add a comment. We see a nice page transition. I go back, nice page transition. So we have everything in place. Not only is it a little bit more visually interesting and exciting, really just kind of a little bit more exciting to interact with, it's actually a little bit more usable. I was going to show you how to utilize some of the other page transition effects, but we're actually running out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and move on, and I'll try to cover that in the build session. So, next, you want to design with themes in mind, and there are these theme resources that you can leverage to ensure that your application is responding to theme changes appropriately. So users are able to customize aspects of the phone experience, one of which is they can choose, you know, whether they want a dark or a light background color, and they can also choose an accent color. And users like it when people respect their preferences. I mean, everybody likes that, right? There are cases where you're going to want to use specific colors because maybe you have some specific branding needs that you need to support, which is totally fine. You're just going to want to check that your interface works appropriately for the various theme settings that your end users might make. So let's quickly take a look at both of these approaches using Expression Blend. I'll stop this. And, all right. So we're in Expression Blend, and all of those changes have been applied to this project that we're, the experience that we're seeing here in Expression Blend. That's why I had to update everything. All right, so one of the first things I want to show you is this device panel that's available in Expression Blend. You don't have to run your application using the emulator or the real phone to test the theme changes. You can use Expression Blend and use this device panel. So, for instance, let's say that I wanted to change the accent color to green. I can see what happens to the interface really quickly without having, again, to run the application, which is really nice. I could also, you know, test the light and the dark backgrounds really quickly. Clearly, as you just saw, now I have a problem in my interface on these light backgrounds. I've hard-coded most of the colors, clearly not all of them. When the user chooses a white background, the application kind of becomes a little bit unusable. And it's further exacerbated in the alerts details page. You look here, you see no information. Imagine navigating to this. So if the developer hadn't tested for this and addressed it, their application would be unusable, you know, with certain user preferences or choices that they've made in terms of theming. This problem is really easy to fix. Again, I've hard-coded most of the colors in my interface in this resource dictionary. I have these four colors here, but I haven't hard coded everything, so I can simply hard code all of the colors. I need to hard code the background color on these pages to the appropriate custom background color that I've defined. So I'm just going to do that real quickly. So I select the layout root grid because it doesn't have a background color. I'm going to go to the property tab and I'm going to select the, let's make this a little bit bigger, the brush resources, and then I can select from the system resources or the custom colors that I've defined. So I'm going to select the custom background color. The information is immediately usable. Let's do the same thing on our main page.xaml page. This time I could apply the background color to layout root or the panorama itself. I'm just going to pick the panorama. Again, go to brush resources. I'm going to select my custom background color. Applications immediately usable. So I'm in a good state, right? For our weather application, I probably don't have a need to adhere to any specific branding. At least in my case, I know I don't. So I've decided, you know, I'm going to allow the user to pick their own colors, and I'm going to leverage, you know, the theme.resources information so that my application will respond appropriately to the theme changes users supply. And that's very easy to do. I'm going to use my current resource dictionary colors, and I'm just going to map those to the theme.resources information. So I'm going to do it one by one. So I'm selecting the color. I'm going to go to color resources, and then I'm going to select the phone foreground color, and I'm on the white. Wait, is that the one I want? Yes, that's custom foreground color, so that's exactly what I want. This will all fit, resolve itself here in a moment. I'm going to choose the phone background color, and I have a subtle color on the page where you can send comments to the owner of the Flickr images. So I'm just going to simply map that to the color resource. There is a phone subtle color. I'm going to go ahead and pick that just so everything's in line, and then I'm going to map to the phone's accent color. And I have, again, if you recall, on the weather, I have the colors binding or being set, you know, when the code is run based on the temperature. So I'm not going to map those to the user's accent color preference. But if we look at our alerts information, I am. So now the user's happy. You know, my experience is a lot nicer for users, and it's working very well, and it's definitely usable on the various theme settings that users can make. Let me save this. All right. So, and Arturo definitely talked about this quite a bit, so I'm going to try to move quickly through this. It's really important. Some of the core application patterns we use in Windows Phone are the panorama and pivot. Not the only ones, but they're really important to understand when to use which and kind of the benefits, the pros and cons of each. So, the image that we're seeing here is Cocktail Flow. They have a really great application. They use both Panorama and Pivot. Panorama is used kind of at the opening experience. They use it really well. And when you maybe drill into the details for making a drink, they're using the Pivot, and which is an appropriate use of the Pivot and the Panorama. All right, so let's talk about Panorama first. Arturo showed the Metrolinx application. These Panorama is intended, you know, for that opening experience. It's really expansive, immersive, draws the user in. Again, think magazine cover, you know, which draws the user into the magazine. You see the magazine, you know, on the stand, and you're like, oh, yeah, that has great information. I'm going to buy it. Kind of the same idea. Some things that you'll notice, there is no status information on the panorama image that we're looking at here. If you use our project templates, there's no status. Is actually the system tray of the status information is set to false. It's not displayed, and the reason is, again, this is immersive and expansive. It's supposed to take up the whole screen and, again, really be there for the user, draw the user in. In our project templates, there isn't an application bar. That's not to say that you can't use it. Your application may require it. We would recommend, if possible, there's a minimized version of the application bar, which I have here, utilizing that in Panorama, again, so that it can be this really immersive and beautiful experience for users. A couple of more things about Panorama. Panorama, also, when you look at the project templates, it does not respond to orientation changes. It's intended to be used in portrait mode, and so we recommend that you do that as well. It will provide a much better user experience for your users. And a couple last things. We also recommend no more than 5 panorama pages, just so your users don't get lost in the experience. Again, this is an opening experience for users, draws them into the content. Another benefit of no more than 5 pages in the panorama is the control itself is not virtualizing any of the information. So if you have a lot of content on these pages, it can harm the performance of the application, and you definitely don't want that because that harms the user experience. It's going to make people unhappy. And so I'm kind of showing that with the image down here. You're on page 0. Pages 1, 2, negative 1, and negative 2 are all in memory. Again, you have a lot of information, a lot of XAML, a lot of controls. On those pages, it can be a performance hit. Pivot. Can be used, as an opening experience for your application or deeper in your experiences. It's focused. It's, we use it in Outlook. This is also from the golf application. A good example of usage here. The system tray, definitely you'll see it in many of our examples. We have that on. Full-sized application bar, not the minimized version, totally appropriate. I think following our model is always good. It also doesn't respond to orientation changes by default in the project templates, but it's a little bit more okay to allow your pivot experiences to respond to orientation changes. Two last things, pivot. We recommend no more than 7 pivot pages. The reason, again, just you don't want users to get lost in the experiences. And if you think you need more, I'd highly recommend looking at your experience and just seeing if there's some other way that you can organize the information and present it to users just to make it just more consumable for people. Pivot is virtualized. So in this image at the bottom, we're on page 0. Pages 1 and negative 1 are in memory. Pages 2 and negative 2 are not. So it could be a little bit more performant. Just another thing to consider when you're creating your applications. All right, so let's check on time. Okay, so this kind of sounds funny, but it actually really is important. It's important to remember back means back. It's not forward, sideways. Really, really is back. In Windows Phone, back does 2 things. Back dismisses transient UIs such as alerts or maybe the keypad, and it takes the user back to the previous page that they were on. It doesn't navigate the user to some entirely new page or drastically change the content on the current page. As Arturo mentioned, we have a hub and spoke model. You start on the start page, you navigate to an application, go to page 1, page 2, page 3. You click back, you go to page 2, page 1, back to the opening page of the application, and then back to the start page. It's predictable, it's consistent, and it provides for a good user experience for users. We definitely recommend that you follow our model. This is an example. I'm not able to run my phone to show you it live, but imagine that I clicked on the people tile on this screen here, which I have my mouse over. I navigate into the people experience. I'm looking at the recent people that I've interacted with. I pan over to the left and I look at maybe the what's new information. And I see a Facebook post. Maybe I want to drill into it, drill into the information. Okay, I'm done. I click back. I go back to the previous page, back again, back to the previous page. Back again, I'm on the start page. Very consistent, very predictable. One of the cool things in these applications, and third-party developers can leverage this now too, is that you can deep link into an application and provide a start page tile for that. So I'm going to show you. I'm doing it right now. I imagine I'm using the phone. Let's step back here real quick. I'm in the People Hub again. I'm looking at my recent contacts. I see that this person in red skating. I want to add this person to, I want to deep link to this person on my start page. So I can pin them to the start page, and now you see them on the start page. When I click on that tile, I'm going to deep link into that person's information. I'm not going to go to the opening, you know, People Hub screen. I'm deep linking directly to that specific information that I've pinned to my start page. I can navigate around. I can go to the history information. Maybe I want to drill into some conversation that we had. I can do that. I click back. I go back to the history page that I was previously on. I click back. I go to the opening profile page. Click back again. I go back to the start page. Because this is transient UI here. Where's my mouse? We're not going to hit this information again. But I click back. I'm going to go back to the People Hub where I created that deep link tile. Again, a very consistent experience. And in Mango, you can leverage like these deep link tile experiences as well. So one of the things like we've actually heard from people is, well, what if I have a deep link? What if I have a shopping app and, you know, I have a wish list and I don't know, maybe a shopping cart or something. Maybe I want to allow a deep link for that wish list because I want people to be able to, you know, maybe place items kind of in a basket for things that they might want, put that on their start page to encourage them to buy the stuff. I want to make money, right? So it's definitely, you know, like a nice opportunity for me as an owner of that experience, a creator of that experience. You know, I might ask myself, well, if they deep link in, what if they want to like navigate around elsewhere in the application? Totally fine. As you saw with the deep link, you know, contact, totally fine. But when the user clicks back, it's important that the back button behave, you know, consistently and predictably, and it should take the user back. All right, with that, 8 minutes. With that, I'm just going to run through one example. In Mango, you can manipulate the back stack, and it actually might make sense in some cases. I have a few examples. I'm just going to talk about one. Let's say that we have this shopping application, and I have a deep link tile to this wish list. The user clicks it. They've decided, you know, maybe I actually do want to buy that item that I have in my wish list. So they deep link in. They're looking at their wish list. They decide to buy the item. They click on the billing. You know, they enter the billing information. They click to the next page. They enter the credit card information. They're done. When they click back, it might be appropriate to take them back to the wish list. This information on credit and billing is really dead. It might make sense for this particular scenario and other scenarios that you might have to manipulate the back stack. You just really need to think about your scenarios. Again, I had other examples. I'm just going to fly through them. And let's just quickly talk about transient interface elements. As you saw in the weather application, every time I like drill deeper into the application experience and click back, you see that opening animation running again. Definitely not a good experience. We want to get rid of that. And so what I'm going to do, or what I do want to do, I'll do it real quickly, is I'm going to place it in a pop-up and then dismiss that pop-up after the animation runs the first time so that the user doesn't see it again until they reopen the application from scratch. You might also consider doing this. Maybe you have login UI in your experiences. You don't want users to hit that login UI, you know, every time they hit back, you know, after drilling deeper into your applications. It'd just be kind of weird. So, again, let's do this very quickly in Visual Studio. I'm going to go to mainpage.xaml. In the location where I have that opening animation, I have it in this grid. There's a bunch of elements in here, canvases and paths and text and whatnot. And the animation itself is here, which is run. So I'm just simply wrapping the pop-up around that grid, and so I have everything in place. The next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the code behind in mainpage.xaml, and I'm going to, the pop-up was called pop, if you noticed. So I'm going to go into, so when I navigate to that page, I'm running this opening animation. When the animation completes, I have an event for that defined in this onNavigatedTo method that I've overridden. I'm just simply going to set the pop-up to false or not open anymore, if that makes sense. We'll take a look at it. So pop is open equals false. And then I'm going to save that, and we can just take a look. The experience is much better. We'll just run this real quickly.